Hello, this is John Chung, and welcome to Totally Awesome Films, where we discuss some of the greatest movies ever made. Now, I want to warn everybody, this is a spoiler podcast, so if you don't want to be spoiled by information presented here, you may want to turn off this podcast, go watch the movie, and come back so that you can better enjoy the show. In this podcast, we're going to talk about the 1994 film Star Trek Generations. Now, I was a fan of the Next Generation TV series in 1994 when this movie came out, but in all honesty, while I did watch the premiere of Star Trek Next Generation back in 1987, Encounter at Farpoint, I didn't exactly fall in love with the series then. And I remember I watched a few more episodes, but I eventually dropped off. And it wasn't until 1991, around its fifth season, that I got back into it. And it was actually the episode Unification, the one that guest starred Leonard Nimoy as Spock. That's what got me watching Next Generation again. And fortunately, around this same time, I also happened to catch a rerun of an episode, Yesterday's Enterprise, which was actually a season 3 episode that had aired 2 years before, but I finally caught it in 1991. And since I was a fan of Star Trek 2-5 era of Star Trek, I love the fact that the crew of the Enterprise C had that era's red military uniforms, and it just really blew my mind, and I thought it was just a kick-ass story. And it really got me invested back into the Next Generation. Now, it was 1991, around season 5, that I started watching all the episodes of the Next Generation. And I do remember at this time, I met two college classmates named Andrew Crotty and Bob Moon, and they were both big Star Trek Next Generation fans. And I remember, I think the class was cellular biology. And now Bob and Andy didn't know each other, but I remember I met Bob first, and then a few weeks later I met Andy, and then I introduced the two of them together, and then the three of us started hanging out after class, and then we became friends going over to Andy's place and watching Star Trek, along with like Cheers and Seinfeld. And for the next 3 years, we pretty much became best friends. And interestingly enough, 20 years later, we are all three still great friends. So I do remember, though, that our friendship pretty much did start with Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, I remember in Season 7, when Star Trek The Generation was going off the air, I remember watching the series finale, All Good Things. And that episode just blew our minds. It was such a good episode. And that episode just gave me chills. If you've seen this episode, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, you need to go watch it right now. It is available on Netflix. You absolutely need to watch this episode. And we were all just so impressed by this episode. And it really got us just pumped up for this upcoming movie. Well, I did graduate college and move back home to Colorado. And then I remember watching this movie without them. And I remember, while watching this movie, I thought it started out pretty strong. I remember I liked that champagne bottle, which is floating in space, and then it christens Enterprise B. And I liked the introduction of the Enterprise B, and it was kind of cool to see a brief return of some of the original cast. And I liked how Captain Kirk died, you know, with a bang, finally passing the Kobayashi Maru test. And I thought that intro was a worthy ending to Kirk. I also liked the introduction of the Next Generation crew on the holodeck, sailing this old British galleon, and I like the idea of Data putting in the emotion chip and him getting overwhelmed with emotions, you know, him going to Guinan's bar and drinking that drink and saying, I hate this, and getting all excited, and him kind of overdoing it and hamming it up with emotions. And I thought the scene of Data getting emotions fit in really well with the show finale, All Good Things, where we go to the future and Data is the chair at Oxford, and he actually does have emotions, and he's smiling and he's telling jokes. While I enjoyed him when I saw it in the theaters, I have to admit that when I saw this movie today, I thought they kind of overdid him a little bit. And I thought that his performance was a little annoying. In fact, I thought that his more subtle emoting in Star Trek First Contact was much better, much more nuanced, and a much better depiction of the character than the sort of hamming it up scenes that he did here. I also liked Malcolm McDowell playing Dr. Soran, and it kind of reminded me of like a James Bond villain. Very creepy, very sociopathic. And while I was entertained by the movie, about halfway or so through, I started getting this really weird feeling. You know, especially when they introduced the two Klingons from the TV series. And it was just this sinking feeling in the pit of my gut. Like, Well, I wasn't really watching a Star Trek movie, but I was watching an old TV episode of Next Generation just put on screen. And it just had this smaller feel of television, and it didn't have the grandeur of a movie experience. And I remember that just kind of bothering me. And then I remember the scene where the Enterprise-D crashes on a planet. And at that time, I remember thinking that the crash looked like a miniature train set. Interestingly enough, when I watched it again today, I actually thought that the crash actually looked pretty good. But, you know, maybe I had my expectations lowered. Well, when the moment came where Picard enters a Nexus, and this is where the movie really took a bad turn for me. So I was really actually on board with the movie up until this moment. But once they brought in the Nexus, aka confusing plot device, the whole film just lost me. First of all, the logic of the Nexus just made no sense. And second, it was kind of stupid. And third, it made no sense. Well, and then came the ending where Kirk and Picard leave the Nexus together and confront Dr. Soren on like this Nevada desert, and they have this fist fight. And I thought it was so stupid. You know, when you pair two great captains together on screen for the first time, I wanted something epic, not a stupid fist fight. And then, before I realized what was going on, Kirk, like, fell off a metal bridge and died? It was really a weird scene, very anticlimactic and very unworthy a death for the great Captain Kirk. So, needless to say, I was very disappointed. Had a lot of wind taken out of my sails for the Next Generation franchise. It was just so utterly disappointing. And for that reason, I actually did not watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine until way later. And of course, my friends know that Star Trek Deep Space Nine would become my favorite Star Trek series, but that's a whole nother story. Well, let's talk about how this movie got made. Ever since 1991, the original cast of Star Trek signing off at the end of The Undiscovered Country, Paramount knew that the next movie was going to feature the Next Generation cast. And in late 1992, around the start of Season 6, Paramount approached Rick Berman. At this time, Rick Berman was basically Star Trek. Rick Berman was handpicked by Gene Roddenberry in 1987 to help create the Star Trek Next Generation series. Now, up to this point, he had been a producer of the PBS show The Big Blue Marvel. I remember watching this show when I was a kid, and it ran for 5 seasons and won an Emmy for Outstanding Children's Series. In 1984, he was hired by Paramount and oversaw Cheers and Family Ties. And in 1986, he was promoted to Vice President of Special Projects at Paramount Network Television. He also directly co-created Deep Space Nine and Voyager with a Next Generation screenwriter, Michael Filler, and would later create Enterprise. Now, Rick Berman wanted the original Star Trek crew to appear as cameos as a way to pass the baton to the Next Generation series. In the original concept of the movie, Captain Picard would face off between Captain Kirk in an all-out space battle between the two starships, and the producers thought the image of the Enterprise-D facing the Enterprise-A would make an excellent poster for the movie. Unfortunately, no matter how much the writers brainstormed, they could not come up with a viable story that could lead to this, and they had to abandon the idea. Now, initially, the producers approached Leonard Nimoy to direct, but after reading the script, Nimoy turned it down. And in the original concept, when they're inaugurating the Enterprise-B, the entire original cast of the Enterprise was supposed to be there. And the focus was supposed to be on Kirk, McCoy, and Spock. Well, Nimoy dropped out, saying that Spock was not needed and that anyone could have read his lines. And considering that the lines were simply changed to Scotty's, shows that Nimoy really may have had a point. And DeForest Kelly, who played Dr. McCoy, who was 74 years old and in poor health, was willing to be in the role, but couldn't get insurance to be on set due to his poor health. And he would pass away 5 years later of stomach cancer. But, interesting, was able to do some voice acting up to a year before his passing. So the producers chose David Carson to direct this film. And he was an established TV director who had actually never directed a feature film. But he had directed a few episodes of The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, And he actually directed one of my favorite episodes, Yesterday's Enterprise. So he was a good choice. He had also directed episodes of Alien Nation, L.A. Law, Northern Exposure, and Doogie Howser. Now, in terms of special effects, in all previous Star Trek films, only models were used. But in 1994, with the rise of CGI graphics, you know, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, had just come out 3 years earlier, and only a year before, 1993, Spielberg dazzled us with CGI dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. So they decided to use CGI models for most of the ships. And most of the special effects were indeed done with computers, and no spaceship models were built for this film, aside from the Enterprise B, which was simply redesigned from the old Excelsior model. And this was the actual model that was used in Star Trek III, Search for Spock, Star Trek IV, Voyage Home, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Now, at the end of the movie, when Shatner officially passes the baton to Captain Picard with the line, "Who am I to argue with the captain of the Enterprise?" I remember this line, and I remember thinking it was a really cool line. But apparently, this was a very emotional moment for William Shatner, and Shatner has gone on to say that this was the hardest line he ever had to deliver. And when you know this and you watch that scene, you can see that it is a little awkward and painful for him. But maybe I'm reading too much into the scene, I don't know. For the villain, they hired Malcolm McDowell, who took the part because he thought it would be cool to go down in history as a man that killed Captain Kirk. And he jokingly said that he was looking forward to being like an answer to a trivia question on like Jeopardy. Now, this is sad, but after the movie came out, Malcolm McDowell actually received death threats from some sick Star Trek fans who were upset at him for killing Kirk. And poor guy, that is just ridiculous. In the original ending of the film, Dr. Saran shot Captain Kirk in the back, killing him, before Captain Picard brought him down. Now, after filming the entire movie, with the ending and wrapping up the film, they screened it to a test audience, and the movie did very poorly. Test audiences hated the ending, feeling that that being shot in the back was not fitting for such a legendary, iconic character like Captain Kirk. So the producers went back, and they refilmed the entire ending, beefing up Kirk's action and beefing up his sacrifice at the end of the film. And of course, the ending that made it to the screen was one where he makes a heroic leap onto the steel bridge and dismantles the cloak of the missile and saves the day. Now, I actually thought this ending was also not fitting an iconic character. So at that time, I couldn't even begin to imagine how bad the original ending was. Well, thanks to the DVD edition, which we can now just YouTube, you can now see the original ending, and it is really bad. Picard pretty much saves the day by himself, and Kirk just comes across like Picard's helpless assistant. And he really does look pathetic, and he really looks pathetic when he's shot in the back by Dr. Saran. So I am very, very glad they did not use this ending, even though I really wish they used an even better ending than the one that they put on the screen. Due to the fans' disappointment with this ending and the sort of lackluster way Kirk goes out, apparently William Shatner actually went to Paramount Studios to pitch an idea for the next Star Trek movie, and this idea of Kirk being brought back to life by the Borg and having Kirk face off against Captain Kirk and the Enterprise-D. Now, Paramount had already had an idea of using the Borg in the next movie and didn't really want to visit that Kirk aspect again. They felt the torch had already been passed, and the next movie should really be a pure next-generation cast movie. However, William Shatner did actually write this movie in a novel, and he, along with co-writers Garfield Reeves Stevens and Judith Reeves Stevens, wrote a book originally called Star Trek, The Fires of Olympus. And in this, the Borg, sure enough, brings Kirk back and pits him against Captain Picard and the crew of Enterprise-D, and even Spock returns to get in on the action. And it was a real all-out space battle, really worthy of a Kirk versus Picard action sequence. And it was actually in this novel that they imply that maybe the alien race that V'ger encounters was in actuality the Borg. The book was renamed Star Trek: The Return, a novel by William Shatner, and was released in April 1996, and it was a success, and is still one of the fan favorites among Star Trek novelizations. Well, how did this movie do?
Well, critically, it was mixed. Many critics, like me, felt that the movie was simply an over-budgeted episode of the Next Generation TV series. And while some fans thought the movie was fun and entirely watchable, others just thought it was stupid. And I think many people felt that this was not a fitting end to Captain Kirk. While I think most people, even people that liked the movie, had to admit that this Nexus thing was very, very confusing. This film would also firmly help establish this belief that the odd-number Trek films are bad and that the even-number Trek films are good. Now, I don't totally believe this. I still think the odd-numbered Star Trek III is actually pretty good. So, but I do think that they have a point with the even and odd numbers. Now, this film holds a mediocre 47% on Rotten Tomatoes, and sure enough, Siskel and Ebert actually gave it a split decision. Gene Siskel actually liked the film and thought it was fun, while Roger Ebert was absolutely disappointed by this film and criticized it for lack of imagination and depth, and also criticized it for really being kind of a lot of in-jokes that only appealed to Star Trek fans, and not being a universal story. Well, how did it do in the box office? It actually did fairly well. Made on a modest budget of $35 million, it made $118 million worldwide. And just for comparison's sake, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, which was made 3 years earlier, was made for a similar $27 million and made $97 million at the box office. So, you know, this film was pretty comparable to the success of that film. Well, despite the critical mixed reviews, the box office did do enough that they were guaranteed to make an eighth Star Trek movie. And we'll discuss that next time on our podcast. Well, that ends this show. I want to remind listeners that to please go to our Facebook page and like our page, Totally Awesome Films, and leave us a comment. It's the best way to have a dialogue with the show and also make recommendations on any possible franchise you'd like to see in future episodes. That ends this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you had a great time.